Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rhoda. We're here today with Lindsay Smith, author of Eat Your Feelings, The Food Mood Girl's Guide to Transforming Your Emotional Eating with Recipes. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Before we dig into our podcast, a quick word from our podcast sponsor, Spice Islands. For better tasting holiday meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands. From Saigon cinnamon and dill weed to bay leaves, garlic powder, cumin, and turmeric, Spice Islands maintains a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. And they use a craft approach to capture the volatile oil of each spice, which gives it its flavor. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. I love this book because it's not a diet book, and it's not a book that purports a one-size-fits-all right way to eat, but it does have some really great values that we can all kind of think about our relationship with food. Can you talk about sort of some of the major ideas of the food mood lifestyle and what you hope to bring people with this book?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing in writing this book was bringing to the table that we need to actually reclaim our emotional eating. So I think many of us think of emotional eating as a bad thing. You know, we think of the part in the movie scene where someone gets, the guy breaks up with the girl and the girl invites over her girlfriends and eats a bunch of ice cream and cries.
Of course. That's
what we think of when we think of emotional eating, and we think of it this bad thing. And you know, even when I tell people the title is Eat Your Feelings, people immediately say, oh, that's me. But I really want to encourage people to eat their feelings for their emotional and mental health, and to dive a little bit deeper into what those emotions are trying to tell you when it comes to your food, your lifestyle, your mind, your body, and how you can take that information to, again, not diet, but to truly live a lifestyle that feeds those parts of your body that help you think clearly and feel good physically. So I think reclaiming emotional eating is definitely one of the biggest things that I was hoping to get out of this book.
I think a lot of people have a complicated relationship with food, and I'm definitely among them. And I've sometimes eaten more than I was really hungry for, and sometimes less. And one of the things that I really love about your book is that you point out the reasons for overeating and undereating are sometimes extremely similar. Can you talk about some of those factors in emotional eating and some of the things that can kind of drive people away from listening to what their body really needs in either direction?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I think that there's a deeper side to all of our cravings. We crave food physically. Sometimes we just want a piece of chocolate cake. But if we really ask ourselves the questions and listen to our body more, we can actually dive a little bit deeper to see what our body is trying to tell us. So for example, some of the deeper sides of cravings are things that we don't necessarily think about on a daily basis when we're rushing around and eating something, or we may tend to overeat because it's really good, or undereat because we're really busy. We don't stop to really think about these things. And that's what I want people to do, is to think about some of these things, such as, you know, our ancestry. Our ancestry plays a huge role into the way that we view food. It's quite literally in our DNA. And growing up, if you had culinary influences, or if you had a favorite dish that one of your family members made, maybe it was grandma's apple pie or Aunt Sally's chocolate cake, whatever it may be, sometimes these things can hit us at different times. And that craving may be, you know, the chocolate cake craving may actually relate to more so a craving of, you know, that comfort that your Aunt Sally always brought to events. And that's what you're really wanting. It's not necessarily the chocolate cake. And also just how, speaking of DNA, just how we were, what our ancestry is. So, for example, if you're Irish, you may be able to digest dairy, whereas, other cultures and other, ancestral lines may find it a little bit more challenging to digest dairy. So those things can definitely tell you a lot about your body. And then my favorite one is one of the ones that I kind of see in my own personal life a lot is the emotional memories, the attachment that we put towards food. I know for me, my dad died in 2012, and I found myself sometimes on Saturdays craving these grilled cheeses. And I was like, why am I craving a grilled cheese all of a sudden? And I realized that growing up, my dad and I would make grilled cheese on Saturdays, and we would watch Unsolved Mysteries together. And so, you know, I could look at that craving as a bad thing. Like, why do I want something like a grilled cheese? Or I could own that craving and really honor my dad's memory. And, you know, maybe it's making a healthier version of the grilled cheese, or maybe it's simply indulging in some old episodes of Unsolved Mysteries to give me that comfort that I'm really looking for.
I love that. I think that cravings can feel so powerful, and sometimes like they really come from a force outside of ourselves that can be very hard to kind of negotiate with. But sometimes it does help take the power out, or at least help you get more control to understand why you're craving something. One of the things you talk about in the book is the importance of sometimes really acknowledging when you are craving something that you might categorize as a quote unquote unhealthy food, that it can be so important to give yourself that rather than trying to make up for it with 10 other things that you think are more okay to eat. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of my favorite things to talk about, because I actually did a survey and we found that 80% of women and 65% of men suffer from food guilt, which means they feel guilty about their food choices on a daily basis, which is a lot. You think, you know, that's a lot of guilt that you take into the kitchen, into the workplace, you know, at a restaurant. And I was kind of really fascinated by this. And I wondered, you know, why do people feel so guilty? And I think it's because we feel if we have a craving for something like chocolate or chips or something that we deem as bad, that it's a bad thing. And then we feel guilty about it. And so we tell ourselves in our mind that we shouldn't have that thing, and we end up stressing about it. And then what ends up happening is you think about that craving all day. And so you try to combat it by, oh, well, I'll just be healthy. I'll have the carrot sticks instead of the chips. And then, you know, you eat the carrot sticks and suddenly you're like, well, that didn't solve the craving. So then you're trying to run these little races all over the day, trying to fulfill or satisfy that craving. And then at the end of the day, you still don't. So you end up eating the bag of chips. And typically people overindulge when they do that. And so I realized that it's actually a stress responder. So when we are stressed or if we feel guilty about eating a certain thing or owning that craving, we actually set, it's no different than if we're stressed about something very traumatic happening. And so the same responders go off in our body. And so what happens, we, you know, the blood rushes away from our stomach into our hands to, you know, fight something off, into our feet to run away, and into our brain to think clearly. And the last thing that your body is thinking about doing is digesting. So when you feel guilty about eating something and you stress about it, it actually is not helping your digestive process. And so then you may end up feeling a little sick from eating it. You may feel bloated. And people often attribute that to the food itself. But what I found, it's often the energy or the stress that goes into the food. So I always encourage people that if you're going to eat the brownie, eat the brownie and feel really good about it. Go into it with a place of love and gratitude. You know, thank the brownie if you have to for nourishing you in whatever nutrients it has, and just feel good about it. And then, you know, if you do that, you're less likely to binge later on. You'll feel satisfied and you'll be able to digest it more properly.
Before we continue with our podcast, a quick word from our sponsor. One of the best things about the holidays is spending time in the kitchen, creating delicious meals with family and friends, sharing recipes, conducting taste testings, swapping tips and tricks. Well, here's one piece of advice for your arsenal. For a noticeably richer flavor, opt for premium spices from Spice Islands. They sun-dry many of their spices and de-stem their chili peppers by hand to deliver the most authentic and intense flavor possible. And they also take the extra steps to ensure richer flavors, like waiting for their dill weed to bloom before harvesting, or milling their garlic to a true powder so it doesn't add any grittiness to your dishes. Better yet, they maintain a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. So whether you're looking for flavor adventure or simply better tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, including one for spiced maple carrots, a quick and simple side to complement any meal. That's spiceislands.com/clever and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. And now back to our podcast. So let's talk about the food in this book, the recipes, of course, but also just how you're helping people think about ingredients differently. I find that often people tend to get stuck in these kind of ruts where they can only think of so many things that they eat, right? And they're kind of bored of those things and they're split up into good foods and bad foods. And I was just flipping through this book and I opened to persimmons and it was like, wow. When's the last time I ate a persimmon or thought about eating a persimmon? So how do you kind of help people think about food differently and think about what they could be eating and how they categorize it in different ways than they're used to?
Yeah, so for me and for this book, I think it's all about listening to your body and understanding your moods. And so one of the things that I did was I do have a complete list of fruits and vegetables, nuts, seeds, and whole grains. And what their mood boosting property entails. And then the recipe sections are actually broken down by emotion. So if you're sad, tired, stressed, hangry, or bored, I actually used foods to create recipes that actually help increase that mood. So if you're sad, the goal is to be happy. And so I've used foods that are known to fight off sadness. And so I think what you can do is take this as a template. One, you can use the recipe. So if you know, you're feeling sad and you really want ice cream, there's ice cream recipes for you, except they use mood boosting ingredients. So you'll feel satisfied from, you know, having something that you're craving, but you're actually using ingredients that will help boost your mood simultaneously. So I think the other thing that you can do personally is use that as a guide or a template for your own creations in the kitchen. You know, there's the recipes for you, but then what you have now is the list of foods that help with each of those emotions and any of your cravings. And so then you can kind of tweak your kitchen or tweak your craving or tweak your recipes that you make on your own to include some of those new foods.
How do you help people think about differentiating between the reasons behind a craving? I think when we're learning to eat, in a way where we're listening to ourselves and our emotions more, it can be hard in the beginning. And it takes practice, I think, to really know the difference between what your body wants and what you think you deserve and all of those different things. So what are some exercises or tools that you give people to sort of help identify cravings and figure out what's behind them and how best to sate them?
Well, I think first and foremost, it comes through, having some mental clarity, because if you can think clear, you'll be able to listen better. So I think even just simply being aware of that and being open to trying some new foods is always good as well. I think the biggest thing, though, is, you know, it comes down to really listening to your body. And I think, you know, now there's studies that show that the gut is the like the second brain. It's, you know, a responder to stress, and you know that gut instinct feeling is something that we all have. And I think using that to your advantage and really listening to your gut instinct at times, and also asking yourself questions. You know, saying, well, when did I crave this? What why was I craving it? And start asking your body or asking yourself these questions, and then you can start pinpointing, you know, and it may take some time. I didn't come to I didn't really listen to the clues of my own body about my dad and why I was craving this grilled cheese until probably a few weeks later, because it took me some time to process it. And then the memory kind of sparked. I remembered, you know, being a kid and eating grilled cheese with my dad and watching Unsolved Mysteries. And then it kind of all came back to me. And once I realized that, it gave me a deeper clue into who I am as a person and to why I crave things. And now with that awareness, I'm able to take that into other situations. And so I would encourage other people to do the same. And it just takes time. It takes, you know, stepping out of what you're kind of about to do or what you're about to eat and asking yourself those questions. And I think the more that you ask yourself over time, the more that you'll be self-aware.
Lindsay, thank you so much for talking with us today. It's a really great book. And I think especially as we head towards the holidays and a lot of eating holidays, it'll be really helpful for people to develop a much better relationship with their eating feelings. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Check out the book, Eat Your Feelings, The Food Mood Girl's Guide to Transforming Your Emotional Eating with Recipes, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.